Okay, welcome everyone to Osmo Dev Call today. The topic is PySim Shell with Sysmo iSim SJA5, which is a programmable SIM card. Let me actually show you one in case you haven't seen a picture or something yet. So I just grabbed one from the stack. Card looks like this on the front side and that on the back side. I mean, it's just a normal plastic card as usual. I'm going to insert it into a reader. So it's inserted in an OmniKey, but of course any other reader will work as long as it supports the PCSC Lite, which is the driver stack for smart cards on many operating systems, including GNU Linux-based operating systems. So let's try the PCSC scan. So yes, we see there is actually two readers in my system, but we see here a reader zero is this OmniKey reader, and it detects a card with a certain ATR that is displayed here. So the reader and the card are detected. And now it's about PySim. So what I will do is I will do a fresh clone so we avoid any contamination from my R&D system. So actually I already created the directory. And now I'll do a fresh clone of the PySim Git repository. Go into it. Of course, all the dependencies that PySim requires are already pre-installed here. This is not realistic for most systems, as you will not have all the requirements installed, but there's a README file and the documentation explains to you how to install those requirements. So in this case, we can just straight away start PySim shell. We pass it the P0 flag for using the PCSC reader number 0. You see here on top, reader 0. This is what the 0 refers to here. We started. And as you can see, it detects a card. It detects some what we call add-ons on the card and some applications with application identifiers here. This is rather comprehensive. On other SIM card models, you will see less of those lines being printed as they support less applications or apps or whatever, add-ons, sorry, not apps, add-ons, as we call them here. So the card is detected. It's also detected it's a Sysmocom SJA5 card. Why does it say Sysmocom SJA5 and not Sysmo iSIM SJA5? Because the detection at this level just says, well, it's a Sysmocom card of SJA5 type, whether it's a USIM or an iSIM or some other product, that is not possible to detect at this point in detail. Sysmocom is selling the card in multiple different profiles, customer-specific profiles, for example. All of those have the same ATR and the same properties, but they might have different parameters and different profiles provisioned onto them. So that's why the naming is slightly different here. It's intentional, it's not an accident. So this is meant as a generic term for all Sysmocom cards of SJA5, which means a specific card operating system on a specific set of chips. But then the profiles might differ from card to card. So we are on the PySim shell. I expect most people will have seen this before, either in the documentation or a previous presentation. So this is not really a 101 tutorial. In general, we navigate around the file system. We have a dir command. It's a bit like DOS in that regard. It's as retro as smart card standards. We can select files. For example, we can select ef.icid. We also have tab completion here. And when we select a file, we get a decode of the file descriptor, whatever the select command returns, some binary blob, and that contains data about the file that has just been selected. So we see it's a so-called working elementary file of transparent structure, and the file identifier in hex and some proprietary information that is not according to the standard. And then access conditions for SimToolkit, what SimToolkit applications can do with this file. Then also this so-called lifecycle status integer, which we will get to later on. Operational activated is the normal case, meaning the file can be used. And then also here we see the security attributes referenced. And this encodes what kind of permissions are required for which operation on the card. This is all standard. You will see that on any card. I could just put a T-Mobile Germany card or a Vodafone Germany card or whatever other card that I have around here, and I would get the same decode. This is, there's nothing specific to the Sysmocom product in this. This is a standardized encoding, decoding of this information. We also see the file size is 10 bytes, and it has a short file identifier, which we can ignore. And now I can do read binary, which reads the binary data and gives me a hex dump of the data. That's the hex dump of those 10 bytes. So probably 20 hex characters here. And what we also have, actually, let's do a help here. We see what kind of commands we have. There's different groups of commands. They depend on basically coming from different specifications. So we have the ISO 7816 commands. That's the core specification of all things smart card. Then we have PySim specific commands that are not really related to the card, but related to the PySim program. Then we have commands that are related to the fact that this is a transparent elementary file, and a transparent elementary file have a couple of operations, such as update binary, read binary, and their decoded versions. Then we have TS102221 specific commands, which is the UICC specification, where we can suspend and resume the card. Then we have the 102222, which contains administrative commands for creating, deleting, resizing, and so on files, and a couple of more PySim shell built-in commands, which actually, yeah, that's not much of a distinction between the PySim commands and that one. Not sure why there is. It doesn't really make sense to separate those. It's more an artifact of how the code is written. So what the command that we will use here is read binary decoded here, which gives us a decoded version of the file. This looks rather similar, and you will see it's just doing nibble swapping and removing the F padding here. So there's an F character here, which is basically how the encoding of the file is specified. And you will also see that the output here is actually a JSON document between those two lines. This is how the encoding decoding in PySim works. We basically have either the raw binary data that's always presented as hex, or we have a JSON document that represents this data. Similarly, this works with any other file. There are some files left where we don't have decoders yet in the PySim program, but by now we've developed encoders, decoders for almost all of the files on the card itself. So, I can select other files here. Let's go to typos happen. So ADFUSIM, we see there's some more data returned here. We again have the file descriptor. Now it tells us it's a dedicated file, a DF, and it has a DF name, which is the application identifier of the USIM application, and the number of memory bytes available on the card in this application, and the pin status of different pins and all kinds of other things, which we'll not look into details here. But let's select the EFIMSI. And we do again a read binary decoded, and we get the IMSI in this document. These are, of course, very simple files because they only contain one specific bit of information. So it's rather simplistic decode. But let's say we select, for example, the EFARRR, which is the access rule references. That's actually a file that contains the permissions. So it's like to avoid having to store the detailed permissions of which user authenticated by which means can read and or write and or delete or whatever the file. And rather than encoding this in every file, we have this referenced security attributes, and those rules are then stored in EFARR. This is now a linear fixed file, which means it is not a transparent file, but a record-oriented file, and it has records of 110 bytes length, and there's 12 of those records. So now I can do something like read a record one, for example. This is the binary version of the record, but if I do read record decoded, I will get a decode of the record, and you will see that this is already much more sophisticated or much more comprehensive than that's not just a single key value pair in the JSON that is generated. So this is basically, I can navigate around the file system, I can explore the card and so on. So in order to actually program the card with configuration data that relates to the network, usually you will have this card so you can run it in a private cellular network, and you might need to adjust some settings to match your network requirements. In order to write to almost all of the files, you need to authenticate yourself with the ADM1 pin, which is the administrative pin. That's basically a pin that identifies you as the operator, then as the operator you have control over all parts of the card, and you can write to any file or field. If you're not authenticated with the ADM1 pin, you have normal user privileges like a normal user has with any other SIM card. So just like a commercial SIM card from a commercial operator, you can read all kinds of configuration data, but for example you cannot read the key material from the card, the secret key material, and you can also not modify any things that are not specified to be user modifiable on the card. So for example, I want to modify the IMSI of the card, for example. Let's just take the raw binary value and try something like update binary and whatever, put a whatever 99 here in front. Then it will tell me that command got rejected. So SW match fail says status word match fail. So we expected a status word of 9000, but we got 6982, and the decode of 6982 is this security status not satisfied fail to write chunk. So we couldn't write to the card because we're not properly authenticated. So now I need to check the key material that I received together with the card. I'm doing this on a different window that's not on the screen here. Just a second, I just need to figure out what the ADM1 value is for this card, which I don't recall off my head. It is the, let me just, oh yeah, 103101. The key data for this card, so the ADM1 value is this one. So what I'm now doing is I do verify ADM, and I copy and paste the ADM1 value for this card. If I don't get any result, it means it's successful. If I'm entering a wrong one, then I get an error message. And entering the wrong ADM pin is actually dangerous because there's a counter that I think only permits three attempts. And if you have three consecutive attempts with the wrong ADM pin, then the card is permanently blocked and you cannot, well, the card is not blocked, but this ADM1 is blocked, meaning you can never authenticate yourself as operator with the ADM1 again. You can still use the card, but you can never change any of the settings that only an operator can change. So be careful not to use the wrong ADM1 pin here. So now I'm authenticated, and now the update binary command actually works. I don't get this error message again. This was just a bogus random update. It doesn't really make any sense. So that's why I'm going to write again the original data in the file, getting back to where it was before. So Normally, of course, the more convenient way to modify this is not by changing the binary data, because it means you need to encode it in your head. You can there's more comfortable methods to edit the files or the data. I will show you in a second. There was just a question from the audience. Does the counter reset once the correct ADM1 has been entered? Yes, that's correct. So whenever you authenticate correctly, the counter resets to 3. It's just like with the normal user PIN on the card. It behaves the same way. You can enter up to 3 times consecutively. If it's 3 times wrong, then you have the PUK, the unblock value. With the ADM1, there is no unblock value, so you're lost at this point. But also with the normal PIN, if you enter it wrong twice and then enter it correctly once, next time you again have 3 tries. So that is reset. So the comfortable way to edit this is actually to say edit binary decoded. And then you will get into your editor, whatever is configured as editor in your operating system, in your user preferences. In this case, it's VI in my case, but you can also start Emacs, Nano, or gedit, or whatever kind of editor you prefer. And now you have the JSON representation, and this is much more friendly for modification. So let's say I wanted to change the IMSI from 90170 to whatever, 26277 or something like this, with the same suffix. And I just write this. It will print the hex encoded value to me just for debugging. And if I do read binary decoded now, I will see it has actually changed this value on the card. I will again reset this just to, so I don't, this is not really something I wanted to change. It's just for demo. So we were at 999. Typing is hard sometimes. So now we're back to the original value. So this is a way how it's easy to modify a file, as long as you know how the JSON document is supposed to look like. And this file, again, is easy because there's only one key and only one value, so it's easy to edit. Changing other files is slightly more complex, and sometimes it's not easy to figure out how the JSON is supposed to look like. This is a, how can I say, a known shortcoming. It's much easier to work with this than work with the binary data in most contexts. So that's it. So for example, let's take another use case where we see that it's basically without context, it's hard to know how the JSON is supposed to be structured. We can select the ef.fPLMN. That's the forbidden PLMN network list. Basically a list of operator codes that the card is not permitted to register or even attempt to register. If we read this file, then we just see, okay, it's a array of 4 entries and all of them are null. So if we actually want to edit this and put some reasonable content in it, I mean, we can read binary, it's just all FF. That's normal on SIM cards, since they refer to flash memory and even old EEPROMs more modern flash memory. The erased state is always all ones, so FF, and the program value then is something different. So unused files normally have FF contents, so unused data padding is always FF on SIM cards. So yeah, but how do we put data in there? In my case, I know it, so I can give you a demo, but I also show you what you can do if you're not aware of what could possibly be done here. So I will now say I want to permit to prevent this card from ever trying to register to T-Mobile Germany. So I put this in here, mobile country code 262, mobile network Kirk 01 as first element in the array of 4 entries. And if I write this, then I will here again get the encoded version of this and read binary decode. I see now the first entry is in this. But how do I know how this is supposed to look like? Well, the only way right now really is to either see if there are some examples online somewhere in the documentation, or you can actually look at the source code. In this case, this is the files are oriented based on the specification. So since we are in ADF USIM and the USIM application is specified in TS31102, this is the file in which this is specified. And if I look at FPLMN, then actually I see, okay, it's an EFPLMN cell. So it's a nice example because it actually means it's from somewhere else. The FPLMN file uses an instance of a class that is imported from TS51011, because basically the same file structure is used in the classic GSM SIM and not just in the USIM. So let's look at the 51011 and for the PLMN cell. Yeah, and then here in the beginning, you can already see there's some test vectors, and they usually give you a good idea of how the data is supposed to look like. So these are basically for our unit tests of the encoder and decoder. We have this. Basically the hex encode on the left-hand side and the decode on the right-hand side. And here we see that basically something like this is the JSON format that we can input in the JSON side. So in case a file is completely empty, you can look at this as a reference for finding out the format. It's not convenient, I understand. In many cases, you already have reasonable content and you can edit it. Nice to see 334 there. Well, I don't actually know why. It's probably just from some random SIM card where we copy and pasted this test vector for the encoder decoder. Micaela says their favorite neighbor country in Mexico. Okay. So that was just how can I help myself in case I don't know how the JSON is supposed to be structured in there. Now, another topic that we often see is enabling or disabling of files and optional features. So these cards have hundreds of files, and each of them has up to dozens of parameters. So we can speak of thousands of parameters that are configurable on the card. And we try with those cards to have all the functionality, all the optional features that any spec ever specified, to have that available, while at the same time, most users will only need a fraction of those features. So it's a bit of a contradiction in terms. So on the one hand, every user only wants a fraction of the features, and on the other hand, we want to have all the features available in the card. And many of those optional new features, they mostly relate to later, more modern specification releases. So in this case here, the Sysmo iSIM SJA5 is compliant to 3GPP release 17. So all the files that are present in release 17, which is the most recent 3GPP release, are supported by the card. But then if you have all those files present, but you don't configure them correctly, this can create problems in that the UEs refuse to register to a network or behave in a weird way, or something just doesn't work. And so the way around this is by disabling files. So we create all those files, but most of them, or many of those modern ones, are disabled by default or deactivated. And if you want to use them, you need to enable them first. Then in this way, we make sure that somebody who doesn't know about those files and doesn't want to use those files still gets a decent behavior from the UE, where those who actually want to use them can enable them and then have whatever new fancy features enabled in those files. So one example, for example, is the EF.EHPLMN. This EHPLMN is the equivalent home PLMN list. So in this file, you can basically specify what other MCC and MNC should be considered a home network. Normally, it's basically the first digits of the IMSI that determine the MCC and MNC of the home PLMN, of the home network. But then there are sometimes operators where there are additional other MCC MNCs which are also considered the home network, which should not be considered roaming. This is particularly in case of network sharing and MVNOs and so on. This is something that is used. This file, on an earlier Sysmocom card, we used to have it enabled, and it created a lot of problems where people basically shoot themselves in the foot with it. So it's disabled now, and we get this response, selected file invalidated. So invalidated and deactivated are synonymous terms. It depends on the type of spec that you look at. Some call it invalidated, and some others call it deactivated. So it's, I think Etsy calls it invalidated, and 3GPP calls it deactivated or something like that. So in order to make use of this file, we need to enable the file first. And if we remember our help commands, there actually were these administrative commands. Where is it? It's not, we don't see that command right now because we are still in the context of the elementary file fplmn. And of course, from this context at the current location of the file system, we cannot activate or deactivate any file because, well, the file that we're using right now must be activated because we are already using it, and we cannot work with any other file. So, I'm going back into the directory in the adfusim, and if I type now help, then actually I will see here that we have deactivate file and activate file as commands available. And so again, what I wanted to select this, and it says, well, it's invalidated, but what I can do is I can do activate file. There's no error message. So now I should be able to select it. And yes, now the file is active and I can select it and I can see what is written in it. And indeed, there is already a record in it for 90170. So the card, the phone complying with the 3GPP specification would now consider the 90170 as its home network. The problem is, as soon as you have the EHPLMN on the card, it will no longer automatically use the prefix from your IMSI. So remember, the IMSI was a 99970 IMSI. And now here we have 90170 in the equivalent HPLMN. So the configuration right now is inconsistent and it doesn't make sense. So the phone would no longer register in the 99970 network. It would only register, the only home network that it would recognize is a 90170 network, and then it would use its 99970 IMSI to register to it. And if it can register, it would consider itself to be in this home network. So if you want to have additional PLMNs, then actually you need to add a record for 99970 here. So then the IMSI prefix 99970, which is no longer considered, has to be explicitly included in the EHPLMN file. So this is all how the 3GPP specs works, nothing that PySim or Sysmocom have any say in that. This is just how the specs work. Another thing that you have to keep in mind is that, and that's again specs, it's not PySim. PySim is just a tool to work with them. Activating the file itself is not sufficient. You also need to enable the related service in the USIM service table. So there is a file called EF.UST, the USIM service table. And the USIM service table is basically a long bit mask. Let's read it in binary. So it's a bit mask, and it tells the modem, the user equipment, what kind of optional features or services this USIM implements. And it does something like, of course. Then we get a decode of this information. So what I did here is I did read binary decoded, but since that puts out hundreds of lines and is very, you have to scroll and search for it. One feature of PySim is that you can just pipe through normal shell commands. So here we used grep with two lines of context, and we grep for equivalent, since we're looking for the equivalent HPLMN. And here we see service 71 activated false, and the description is equivalent HPLMN. And what we need to do if we want to actually use this file, we also need to activate the service. So what we do now is we say help. And we see that there is a EFUST file specific command, genau here. German. Exactly here. So we have USD service activate and USD service deactivate. So what we can do, let's read it again. So now we can do something like USD service activate 71. And now if I reread it, I get 71 activated true. So now the service 71 is activated, telling the modem that the EHPLMN exists and contains supposedly correct content. So the modem is permitted to use that file. It's important that there is a consistent configuration. So if you just enable the file and disable the service, according to the spec, no phone should use it. But are you sure that there's no phone out there that has an implementation bug where it doesn't check the service table and just uses the information in the file anyway? So I personally always would advise to keep those two in a consistent state. Also, the other way around, if you enable the service here in the UST, but you deactivate the file, you might run into bugs in the baseband protocol stack where then it fails to read the file and behaves in some weird way, or even declares the SIM card as illegal or something like that. So it's generally useful to keep those two in sync. We have implemented a command, UST service check, that checks for the consistency between the services as indicated in the USIM service table and the actual files that exist. So it basically goes through all the services and then checks, well, okay, service number two is active. And if service number two is active, I would have to check the spec now, which is what here. I think the error messages actually belong to the service that's listed below. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. I'd have to check. But in any case, basically, it runs through the services and tells you discrepancies. Here, for example, we say service 36 inactive. So the service says it's inactive, but the file related to the service is actually selectable. So to make it consistent, you could deactivate the file EFDCK. Turn it into a consistent configuration. So why is the card an inconsistent configuration when it ships? For historical reasons. Only for new files, we have this policy that we deactivate the file and deactivate the service. In a previous Sysmocom card products, we always had the files present, selectable, but the service is disabled here. And that is basically what you see here with this is selectable and so on. Here we have another inconsistency, but actually I have the feeling that there's something also broken in this consistency check. I have to investigate. These are expected, but this one actually is weird, and I will look into that later on. But yeah, this is a tool that can detect such inconsistencies if you are interested in that. Okay, I will deactivate the service again, just so my card is in a consistent state, and I will deactivate file ef.ehplmn here. Actually, the way how it works is I first select the ef.ehplmc. I don't do this every day, and then I can do deactivate file, and now it's deactivated. So that was a example about this, bringing in the USIM service table and so on, and these bits and pieces. Another common task that we see recently is that people want to play with the modern 5G security features, such as the concealed subscriber identifier, the SUCI. This is something that the data for it gets stored in a file. First, there is a 5G system directory underneath the USIM application. That's where we are now. There's a lot of files up to release 17, and there's the SUCI calc info file. Which is empty in this case. And this file contains the key material for the computation of the concealed subscriber identifier by the UE. So there's two different ways how this works. One is that the key material is stored in the SIM card and never leaves the SIM card, and the cryptographic operations, I think it's elliptic curves cryptography, are performed inside the SIM card. And the second option is to have the computation inside the phone and just the key material on the card. So the phone will read the key material from the card and then perform this calculation. What we're looking at here is the second option, and no key material is configured, obviously, since it's not really something that we can, as card manufacturer, can give any reasonable default. It's the keys that you, as a network operator, have in your network. So that would have to be stored here. Again, how does the format look like? You would have to look at the source code or look at some documentation to figure that out. I have a prepared file here that contains some content that is from, I think, a Vodafone SIM, actually a production network here. So I'm first deleting all of this. And this is basically how the data looks like. So we have here the public keys of two key identifiers. And here the priorities for those. And if I write this on the card, you can see now it's stored on the card in this format. Of course, and second, of course, again, we have the question of which files or which services do we need to activate in the USIM service table. The same applies here. So we now have valid data in the file, but this is not used unless the EFUST service is has a matching configuration. So we can do /EFUST read binary decoded grep C2 CT. I'm surprised. I'm not getting the okay. Yeah. So I know that it's service number 124 that we need to enable, but it was not printed here because, well, actually, the acronym is expanded here. So graphing for Suchi only gives you the service 125, which is the calculation by the USIM, which is explicitly not what we wanted to configure here. So we would need to activate the service USD service activate 124. And now we have that service activated. In case you have any doubt about such things, what you need to do or what you can do, just look at the spec. In this case, I already mentioned it. It's the 31.102. So if you look in the spec, and actually in events, you can put, you used to be able to put chapter numbers here or some, but I can also look at this. So EF Suchi calc info is here described in the spec. And it tells you if Suchi calculations performed by the USIM. This is the sentence I'm looking for. So service number 124 is the one that relates to this file, or actually the first one. If Suchi calculations performed by the ME, service 124 is available, and service number 125 is not available, this file shall be present. This is basically, if you want to use this file, you need to have 124 enabled and 125 disabled. That is the wrong window. That was the right one. And this is exactly what we have here. Let's do the full decode once. Let's scroll it through. So here we see 124 is activated and 125 is deactivated. So this is the necessary UST configuration for what we just did, storing the key material in this file. I'm again reversing that. removing all this stuff here. The card is again in a consistent state. And yes, I'm missing a comma here. Okay, so that's another common thing that people want to configure. Another common thing to change, for example, is the key material or the cryptographic algorithm. Now, this is where we get into things that are not 3GPP standardized. I mean, the algorithm, of course, but basically how the key material is stored in the card and which algorithm the card supports is entirely an implementation detail. But since PySim has support for the Sysmocom cards, what we can do is we can do select ADF USIM, for example, and we can select ef.usim auth keys. This is the file that where the key material is stored in this specific card. And we can do read binary decoded, and we see some configuration as well as the K and OP or OPC value. So here it says OPC instead of OP. So this value is actually the OPC and not the OP value, and that is the key. And we have Millenage enabled right now. And let's say we want to switch to another algorithm. Excuse me for a second. So, we can switch the algorithm by changing the contents of this file. Let me just quickly check. I guess it's so. Let's switch to XOR, for example. Just change the algorithm here to XOR. Test algorithm. And when I read it back now, it switched to XOR. So now the completely insecure for development and lab use only XOR algorithm with a cryptographic security level of minus 10,000 is enabled instead of the Millenage, which is actually a production algorithm that we can use. The new SJA5 cards not only support XOR for 2G and 3G and Millenage for 2G, 3G and COMP 128 version 1.2.3 for 2G, but also the new TUAC authentication algorithm, which has much more configuration and much more parameters to specify. I have again a prepared file for a TUAC configuration. So here we can specify the key length and the size of the encryption and integrity protection key and the size of the MAC and the results and so on. So many different things can be configured, and also the OP and K values are much longer. So this is now a change to how you would set this for TUAC. And once again, if you're worried about the how to find out what kind of values are available in the JSON document, you can look at the source code. In this case, I think we don't actually have a regression test, which is a pity. That needs to be changed. But we have a declarative parser here. And you can actually see for TUAC, we have CFG, TUAC CFG, number of CACHAC iterations, OPC and K. And then the CFG goes to CFG by TUAC, which is specified here. And then you even see, well, the values that are permitted, like which key lengths and so on. So this can give you an idea about the values that you can use in building such a JSON document that complies with the what this system supports. So that was this example. I'm just going to leave it here. I can reset that later. I can also reset it now. I think we still have it here. Yeah, the original config to get back to my original SIM card. So, yeah, so that's back to where we were originally. Typing is sometimes difficult, especially when talking at the same time. So, yeah, another demo or example that I can give you is, for example, to enable mission critical services. 5G has optional features for mission critical push to talk, mission critical data, and all kinds of other services. And whether or not a UE is permitted to use such services or to request such services from the network is stored again in another file. So we can. UAC, AIC is the file name for this. Again, you can find it in the specification. And here you can see the mission critical service is disabled. And you can enable that just by switching that false into a true. And then the UE will start to request mission critical services from the, if the UE supports it, of course, from the network. Which means that even at the RRC layer, there will be different parameters encoded, and there are some network implementations which do not support this. So we had in a previous product, in the SJA2 product, we had this enabled and set to true by default, and there were many people complaining that they couldn't register with the Sysmocom card to 5G standalone networks of certain vendors. And yeah, of course, the users did not bother to properly configure the contents of all those cards. So now we switch to the more conservative default of having those disabled. And whoever wants to use mission critical services in the 5G network can then enable this flag on the file. But there again, you see how sort of it bites you if you try to enable all the features and then the UE behaves as specified, and then the network side maybe doesn't support that feature and it trips over. So it's very important that all of those files and configurations are all configured exactly like it's required for the given network. Okay, that's sort of what I wanted to show here in the demo. I'm very happy to demo other things in case somebody has any questions or has any idea what should be demoed. So now I hand it over to you. Let me know what you want to know or what you want me to try or show. The question was, is there a mapping between MCC, MNC tuples, and canonical network names on the card, or is that just in the UE? It can be either or it can be both. So traditionally, in old GSM phones, there was only a hard-coded compiled in table in the phone. Later on, that is a table that could be modified in a sense that whenever there was successful network registration and the MMInfo message with the network name was received, the phone would update its internal table on the phone. And then later on, there were some additions to the SIM card specifications, how operators could put network names on the SIM card. And this all then gets merged together. So there is a table. Now I'm trying to remember which file it was in off my head. SPN. Typos, yeah. SPN, yeah. So here, I think we can actually just provide a single service provider name. I think there was something else. Let me just quickly check the spec. Maybe it was just on the USIM. Service provider name. says try to name icon. Yeah, you can even put an icon on the card. Yes, I saw that before. SPNI. Yeah, and then you can have a list of PLMNs in a TLV that tells you when the service provider name shall be displayed. But I think there is something else than this service provider name. Okay, yeah, so it's just one name that you can store in this, but there might be something else. I think there's even a file, I forgot about it now, right now, but where you can specify different operator names to be displayed in different location areas or tracking areas, something like this. Ah, yeah, Michaela already posted. There's the PNN, the provider network name, and the OPL, the operator list. Yeah. Thanks for the reminder. I knew there was something, but I didn't recall the details. So OPL. So the operator list is the one where you specify the MCC MNC and the location area code range or mask, and then you tell it, well, use this PNN record, so a given record number in the EF.PNN, which contains the actual names. So it's like pointers. And here we don't have any names in the PNN file, but this is where you would store this. Yeah. There was another question or comment. I'm wondering if we can somehow auto-generate documentation for EFs from the respective construct definitions. At least field names hierarchy would be very helpful. Yes, of course, it would be useful. As I said, it's a known problem. I think my strategy would... So for some files, yes, it's possible. But for some others, I think it will be very difficult to generate that. I mean, ideally, you would have a JSON schema generated, actually, that... like in a machine readable format defines what kind of parameters are permitted where and so on. But I guess that will be probably difficult, at least in some situations. My idea is more that we make sure that we have unit tests, meaningful unit tests in the code, and then include them automatically in the documentation as examples for the given files, so that you have like 1, 3, 4 different real-world examples in the documentation, how that should look like, and I think that will already be helpful to users. And given that those examples are actually executed by the unit tests, we also know that these examples will work, and they're not some stuff that's out of date or somehow generated and might not be exactly working. That's the question, what's the diff actually? So fundamentally, the first difference is that it's a different, well, it's different chips, because the old chip that was used in the SJA2 was no longer end of life and no longer available. And the second difference, that it's a completely different operating system, it's probably, I don't know, 8 years or something, or at least 5 years of difference in operating system development there. So it's a much more recent smart card operating system on it. And then the differences from there are mostly in the profile or in the capabilities exposed by the operating system. So the SJA2 doesn't support the TUAC algorithm. It doesn't support XOR for testing. Those are constraints by the operating system, and you can't really do that with this old operating system. And then the more user visible profile differences, actually there's a section in the user manual. If you look at the Sysmo ISIM SJA5 user manual, there's a section called changelog somewhere. Well, I can just look for it. It's definitely in there, even though it's not, yeah, I didn't see it in the index. Ah. So why it keeps jumping around? So here you see the major new feature list compared. So yeah, even TLS 1.2 for OTA and AES previous card only was, I think, DES, or if AES, then only 128-bit capable, and so on. And then you also have a change log for the version 0, version 1, and yeah. So you can look at all the low-level details in this user manual. Keith says, at one point, I think you mentioned having example key data from another card. How are sensitive data on the card protected to prevent cloning, etc.? Well, the keys that I showed or that I copied from another card are just the keys for generating the subscriber concealed identifier. And as I said, there are two different ways to do this. One is the computation in the UE, and the other one is the computation on the card. Of course, on the card is more secure because those keys never leak. On the other hand, that requires the card needs to do elliptic curve crypto, which means you need a cryptographic hardware accelerator for that specific purpose, meaning you need a more expensive and more recent chip, meaning you need to pay more for your card. So that's a choice that the operator makes, whether or not this specific key is accessible to anyone who has authenticated themselves with the user PIN against the card, or whether they want to do this entirely on the card itself. The normal keys for authentication and so on, those are all stored in the card and not accessible unless you authenticate yourself with the ADM1 PIN. So that's not something you get access to on the card, on any card. And in general, you can expect that there's a lot of attention at this, since, as you mentioned, being able to copy the keys would mean you could clone the card, which would mean you break the business of mobile operators. So they have a very strong incentive not to make you capable of reading that key material in a reasonable effort. But in the end, there's no, let's say, no mandatory standard or specification. It's in the end, it's up to the operator, right? If you are the operator of a certain network, it's up to you to decide what kind of SIM card with what kind of operating system with what kind of security features you purchase or not. Next question is, could you in theory write a custom card operating system for the SJA5? I remember the CC32RS512 had a DIP variant with exposed JTAG and whatnot. This is not, well, okay, Sysmocom could in theory do it, but the downstream customers could not, meaning that of course, we can buy those cards, or anyone can buy those chips in quantity, in card form factor, in a way where they only have the bootloader and no operating system installed. But the way how we sell those cards, they have the operating system installed and they are already personalized. So the lifecycle state is at a point where you cannot go back to the bootloader and install a random other card operating system. The main reason why it's in practice not possible is again the lack of documentation. So the chips that we use from Samsung and Infineon, even we don't have any documentation on the hardware. It's sort of known that they use a ARM secure core. That's an ARM core family derived from Cortex M0 plus or M3, depending on what you do, SC000, SC300. But then ARM doesn't document anything about those core either, other than that they are derived from the Cortex M0 or Cortex M3. But then they have all kinds of additions that you don't know. And then the integrator, Samsung or Infineon or whoever it is, they probably then put whatever kind of NAND flash peripheral and ISO 7816 UART and whatever other peripherals around that core, and add flash and RAM of their choosing. And at this point, you basically, you don't know anything anymore about how to program it, even though it would execute normal instructions of a Cortex-M0 or Cortex-M3 microcontroller. So that's sort of the constraint there. And depending on the chip you source, also, so as I said, for you can buy the chips in the bootloader stage where they don't have an operating system installed. For some cards or some vendors, it's possible to, but you can actually just install an operating system without any cryptography in that state. But for the more higher end chips, even that is basically already dongled down, and you need to, like, you have basically a secure boot chain, so your operating system needs some kind of signature or some kind of key material to actually use the bootloader to install that. I haven't looked at this in detail. It's not what we do, but it's on the more sophisticated chips that is this definitely the case.